The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
Hi, everybody. Coming up, Nicole tells your fortune, looking ahead. So get out your crystal and stay tuned with Mistress Nicole. All dressed in leather, you won't forget her. You want to love her and you won't let go. Who's that woman, crazy woman, Nicole?
All right. Hello and welcome to a Wednesday. It's Wednesday, right? Oh my goodness, I'm exhausted. So let me tell you what has been going on today and what today's show is, because it's actually a two-parter. So I'm filling in on the broadcast again today. You know, Brad Friedman takes an inordinate amount of time off, just saying. And so I fill in for him when I can. You know, he pays me, in case you were wondering, so I don't do it for free. I mean, I'm nice, but I'm not that nice. So so here's the deal. Yesterday, we had a busy show, right? I had, what did we do yesterday? Oh, I had Admiral Stavridis on. But there was big breaking news yesterday, right? The Durham probe, you remember what that was about, right? It was, you know, Donald Trump saying he wanted to get down to the what?
I hope they now go and take a look at the oranges.
The oranges
of the investigation, the beginnings of that investigation about the Mueller report. The Mueller report, I wish, covered the oranges, how it started.
Yeah.
The beginnings of the investigation.
Right.
How it started.
Got it. The oranges. Yeah, sure. We understand. Ugh. Anyway, so the Durham probe brought one case, and it was kind of a nothing burger. I hate that term. I don't know why I used it, but, you know, I think I'm just a little slap happy at this point. So here's the deal. I really didn't cover the story yesterday because I didn't have the facts. And frankly, I've not been paying that much attention to the Durham probe because there's no there. So anyway, I knew who I wanted to call, and sure enough, I did. Marcy Wheeler, who's my expert, go-to person for all things having to do with the former guy's administration and the scam he pulled on the nation and the 1/6 committee and all that stuff. And I hadn't spoken with Marcy in a while, and I thought this is the perfect time to reach out to her. But wouldn't you know, this week, my show's completely booked. It's a busy week here on the Nicole Sandler Show. But I'm filling in for Brad tonight. So here's the deal. Today's show is a two-parter. First half, here, now, live. You're here. You knew where to go and all that. So Digby will be joining us shortly. Heather Digby Parton, who, of course, is one of the OG progressive bloggers. She blogs at digbysblog.net. That's the hullabaloo site. And whenever Digby and I get together, we never have enough time. So I said, I'm going to call you a little earlier this time so we have more time to talk, because, you know, there's tons of stuff going on. So I had Digby set to come on today. But I reached Marcy yesterday, and she's like, well, I can tape early tomorrow, your time. You know, Marcy Wheeler lives in Ireland these days. And so to come on live, it's really late over there. It's like after 11 o'clock at night already. So she likes to tape early in the morning. And so yesterday when I asked her, she's like, can we do it like 9 o'clock tomorrow, your time? It's like, okay. You see the bags under my eyes? Oh, they're a little more pronounced than usual. Not that 9 o'clock is early. I'm up at 5, right? Because I got a dog and my body clock is weird. Anyway, so I woke up this morning at 5, did our thing, got some of what's news done, dialed in to Marcy at 9 o'clock. Eastern time, recorded an hour to put on Brad's show tonight, and then came back, did my work, you know, did what's news, prepared for today's show. At 3 o'clock this afternoon, I had another taping for a show that's going to air on Friday. And I'm going to air this on Friday because it's about UFOs. And it's really fascinating. So I had to tape that today. And in between, I'm piecing together Brad's show, which has to go up. His show is so complicated. I have to send it out to like 20 different places, do 5 different versions of it. It's really very work intensive. To do an hour-long show, it takes many hours. Like this show, because I do it live, it takes hours of prep. But then, you know, it's showtime and it's time to go. So anyway, a long way of long-winded explanation that today's show is a two-parter. First part now until 6 p.m. Eastern, 3 Pacific. We'll have Digby in a few minutes. And then go take a break. Go eat something, take a walk, you know, take a nap, but come back at 8 p.m. Eastern tonight on the Progressive Voices Network and also on my audio stream, which when I'm not on the air, relays the Progressive Voices Network, the broadcast airs. So you can hear it here, wherever you listen to this show. Well, not the video streams, but NicoleSandler.com, the Listen Live page, or NicoleSandlerStream.com or ProgressiveVoices.com. Or you can just go to bradblog.com sometime after 8 p.m. Eastern tonight and listen directly off the website because his show is a podcast. It's not a live broadcast anywhere. And you'll hear Marcy Wheeler. And I'll post it as well. I'll podcast it out too. So if you subscribe to the podcast, you'll get both parts of today's show. Make sense? I know So anyway, all that's going on, and we'll get to that in a moment. But there has been some breaking news today. So where do we begin? I guess we begin with the Johnny Depp thing. Now, I haven't been covering it. I haven't been following it. But apparently, this is like the trial of the year. This is what America tuned in for, to hear about Johnny Depp and Amber Heard, who I never heard of before, who apparently abused one another. And so they had this ugly trial. She had written an op-ed, why anybody would publish it, I don't know, alleging that he abused her. And he sued her for defamation, saying, you're saying I did these things, I didn't do these things. And apparently the jury believed him because they awarded him $15 million in damages. Now, I didn't listen to the whole verdict. I'm kind of busy today. And besides, I tried listening and it's like, okay, enough already. Just get to it. I think the judge awarded her some damages too, because they're both fucked up. Just so you know, there's a history with Johnny Depp down here where I live. Johnny Depp grew up in Miramar, Florida, which is just a couple of towns down the road. And when he was younger, he played in a rock band. Now, I didn't know him then. And I was already probably gone. I grew up down here, but I went away to college, and then I moved up to New York, and then out to L.A. But somebody that I met much later, a woman named Sheila Witkin, see, it's such a small world, who worked with my friend Terry at a record label called WTG. Sheila Witkin was also from Hollywood, Florida, and when she was younger, and her son Bruce was in high school with Johnny Depp, they were in a band together called The Kids. And they're sort of legendary down here in South Florida. So I got to know Sheila and Bruce through my friend Terry, though I never met Johnny Depp until years later. He was down here to do a tribute benefit concert to celebrate the life of Sheila Witkin. She passed away a few years ago. And at the time, I was doing mornings on WINZ in Miami. Johnny Depp came in to go on the big classic rock morning show. And my friend Bruce brought him. And I saw him like, Bruce, bring Johnny into my studio. And so he did. Pissed off the morning guy at the classic rock station, but tough. And Johnny Depp, they had such an affectation. He sat at the microphone. And he spoke so softly that I had to ride the levels on the board to pin his microphone as high as it would go. And you still couldn't hear him. Anyway, not that that's here or there. I don't even think he was in the courtroom today. So anyway, that's what happened to Diane Russell. Says Depp has a wonderful voice. I guess if you can hear him. So that happened. Another news story. Sheryl Sandberg is stepping down from Meta Corp. Wasn't she the lean in person? You know, it's like this doesn't have anything to do with real life. You know what I mean? All right, so we're going to call Digby in a couple of minutes. There actually is some other news, and some of it comes by way of an op-ed. You know, Joe Biden wrote an op-ed that was in the Wall Street Journal yesterday about inflation, and today he's got one in the New York Times, and it's headlined, What America Will and Will Not Do in Ukraine. So let me share this with you, and then we'll get Digby on the phone, okay? So Joe Biden writes, the invasion Vladimir Putin thought would last days is now in its fourth month. The Ukrainian people surprised Russia and inspired the world with their sacrifice, grit, and battlefield success. The free world and many other nations, led by the United States, rallied to Ukraine's side with unprecedented military, humanitarian, and financial support. As the war goes on, I want to be clear about the aims of the United States in these efforts. America's goal is straightforward. We want to see a democratic, independent, sovereign, and prosperous Ukraine with the means to deter and defend itself against further aggression. As President Volodymyr Zelensky of Ukraine has said, ultimately this war will only definitively end through diplomacy. Every negotiation reflects the facts on the ground. We've moved quickly to send Ukraine a significant amount of weaponry and ammunition, so it can fight on the battlefield and be in the strongest possible position at the negotiating table. That's why I've decided that we will provide the Ukrainians with more advanced rocket systems and munitions that will enable them to more precisely strike key targets in the battlefield in Ukraine. We'll continue cooperating with our allies and partners on Russian sanctions, the toughest ever imposed on a major economy. We'll continue providing Ukraine with advanced weaponry, including Javelin anti-tank missiles, Stinger anti-aircraft missiles, powerful artillery and precision rocket systems, radars, unmanned aerial vehicles, Mi-17 helicopters, and ammunition. We will also send billions more in financial assistance, as authorized by Congress. We'll work with our allies and partners to address the global food crisis that Russia's aggression is worsening, and yes, it is. And we will help our European allies and others reduce their dependence on Russian fossil fuels and speed our transition to a clean energy future. We will also continue reinforcing NATO's eastern flank with forces and capabilities from the United States and other allies. And just recently, I welcomed Finland's and Sweden's applications to join NATO, a move that will strengthen overall U.S. and transatlantic security by adding two democratic and highly capable military partners. We do not seek a war between NATO and Russia. As much as I disagree with Mr. Putin and find his actions an outrage, the United States will not try to bring about his ouster in Moscow. So long as the United States or our allies are not attacked, we will not be directly engaged in this conflict, either by sending American troops to fight in Ukraine or by attacking Russian forces. We are not encouraging or enabling Ukraine to strike beyond its borders. We do not want to prolong the war just to inflict pain on Russia. My principle throughout this crisis has been nothing about Ukraine without Ukraine. I will not pressure the Ukrainian government in private or public to make any territorial concessions. It would be wrong and contrary to well-settled principles to do so. Ukraine's talks with Russia are not stalled because Ukraine has turned its back on... Ukraine's talks with Russia are not stalled because Ukraine has turned its back on diplomacy. They're stalled because Russia continues to wage a war to take control of as much of Ukraine as it can. The United States will continue to work to strengthen Ukraine and support its efforts to achieve a negotiated end to the conflict. And he wrapped it up. I'm getting to the end of it. Unprovoked aggression, the bombing of maternity hospitals and centers of culture, and the forced displacement of millions of people make the war on Ukraine a profound moral issue. I met with Ukrainian refugees in Poland. women, and children who were unsure what their lives would be and whether the loved ones who stayed behind in Ukraine would be okay. No person of conscience could be unmoved by the devastation of these horrors. Standing by Ukraine in its hour of need is not just the right thing to do. It is in our vital national interests to ensure a peaceful and stable Europe and to make it clear that might does not make right. If Russia does not pay a heavy price for its actions, it will send a message to other would-be aggressors that they too can seize territory and subjugate other countries. It'll put the survival of other peaceful democracies at risk. And it could mark the end of the rules-based international order and open the door to aggression elsewhere, with catastrophic consequences the world over. I know many people around the world are concerned about the use of nuclear weapons. You think? We currently see no indication that Russia has intent to use nuclear weapons in Ukraine, though Russia's occasional rhetoric to rattle the nuclear saber is itself dangerous and extremely irresponsible. Let me be clear. Any use of nuclear weapons in this conflict on any scale would be completely unacceptable to us, as well as the rest of the world, and would entail severe consequences. Americans will stay the course with the Ukrainian people because we understand that freedom is not free. That's what we have always done whenever the enemies of freedom seek to bully and oppress innocent people, and it's what we're doing now. Vladimir Putin did not expect this degree of unity or the strength of our response. He was mistaken. If he expects that we will waver or fracture in the months to come, he is equally mistaken. Again, the words of Joe Biden, 46th President of the United States, as published on the opinion page of the New York Times. So that's what Biden is thinking. Okay? All right. That's it with that portion of the program. And now, I need to dial Digby because she's going to be on the phone today. So let me do this while we call her. Let's hear this.
What's that, Leonardo? Who's Nicole Sandler's next guest? Why, it's Digby, of course. Who's Digby? Observe, Leonardo. That's Dig for Dig and B for B. Digby.
Ah, Digby.
Hello.
How are you?
I am fine.
These are crazy times. That's a loaded question, I think. It's you're never sure what you're going to get because things are so nuts. I guess there was a diversion over the last 6 weeks or something. There was a trial that a verdict was delivered in today. Johnny Depp and Amber Heard. I guess this has captivated much of the American public for the last 6 weeks. I've not really been paying attention. Have you?
Not really. I mean, I had sort of a vague idea of what was going on, but it wasn't. I was actually paying attention to a different trial, which was this Sussman trial that was that John Durham trial.
Right.
And all the January 6th stuff that's going on. So, I mean, I'm not, you know, passing judgment on anybody who followed it, and I think it's an important story in terms of, you know, domestic violence and women's rights and women's power and those kinds of relationships, but it just isn't one that I was sort of keeping up with. So I did watch the verdict today. And
did
it was
you?
Kind of, yeah, I mean, it came on TV and I happened to be watching it.
It was there, right?
Yeah, and so I watched it. But, and, you know, I mean, it's kind of funny because, you know, I live in L.A., as you did for many years, mm-hmm. and I actually ran into Amber Heard a few times. She was with a... Before she was with Johnny, she was with a woman, a photographer, I believe, and I, you know, ran into her at some social occasions. She's, you know, I don't have nothing to say about that. I don't know why I'm even dropping that other than to just point out that she's an extremely beautiful woman, as anybody can see. You know, I mean, it's sounds to me like it's a pretty sad situation. And, of course, she was dinged for a lot of money. I mean, you know, $13 million, it overall, once he has to pay her $2 million, she has to pay him $15 million, and
oh,
I think she's got
okay.
a lot less money than he does. So
right. No, anyway. I heard that there were damages yeah. flying on in both directions. I didn't mm-hmm. listen to the whole thing. I was kind of busy today. And so, you know, and I wasn't paying attention to that. I just find it curious that this is what the American people glommed onto. And I guess it went on for 6 weeks. Really?
Yeah.
This eats
six
up.
Weeks. And just, you know, in well, look, I mean, you've got two actors, right?
Yeah.
So the testimony, they both testified for days.
Yeah.
And that, of course, I think was riveting to some people. And it was no doubt dramatic. I didn't watch it. I saw some clips, you know, as they came up on my Twitter feed, and that was about it. so I think people got interested. And, you know, I think also, Nicole, I mean, politics and world events and war and inflation and everything else that's going on, maybe in some weird way, this was the kind of story, you know, I mean, it had, you know, rich and beautiful people
right.
with a lot of money involved, but it was also a subject, I think, that people can relate to, you know, a bad marriage, a bad divorce, and, you know, accusations flying. Maybe it was, you know, just a distraction, as you put it.
Definitely.
Maybe people needed that. I mean, for me, it just didn't seem that interesting. And I kind of like to watch trials. It's not that I don't normally do that, but that just didn't, that one just didn't grab me. And I guess I was like you, I was busy.
Yeah, right. Busy. We got stuff. You had to write your column for Salon.com, for instance, which is
exactly.
about the Durham outcome. Now, so, and actually, you're the second person today I'm talking about this with, the first being Marcy Wheeler, who
oh
I spoke
God.
With.
Oh, my God. Well, you've got the real story.
Oh, my
then.
God. So, Marcy, just so you know, I taped with her early this morning because she's out in Ireland, and
I'm
guest hosting the broadcast tonight. So, today's show is a two-parter. We've got you now, and then tonight on Brad's show, Marcy Wheeler. So it's a doubleheader. People always tell me I need to go back to a two-hour show. Well, here you go. So we are covering this along with some other stuff. I just read Joe Biden's editorial from the New York Times about what we will and won't do in Ukraine, and it's good that he's giving information like that. I still. You know, yesterday, Digby, I spoke with Admiral James Stavridis.
Mm-hmm.
And I pissed him off because I called him General, too.
Yeah, the Navy and the Army don't like that.
No, they don't like that. But he got over it. And, you know, it's interesting to talk. I don't get to talk to military people very often. And you know me, I tend to, you know, say what I think. So the last time I spoke to a military person, I got into it with Wes Clark and found out he was a warmonger of all things. So it didn't go well. But Stavridis was okay. And, you know, talking about war with a military person, it's just a weird thing,
Yeah. You
know?
Well, they're going to have a unique perspective. I mean, there's just no way you can avoid that. Although an important one to kind of understand, I think.
Absolutely. That's why I was glad to talk to him. He's got a new book out, and the book is about nine specific stories from throughout history of people who were able to take control during times of great conflict, like working under pressure. And it talk about timely, because you think to the shooting, how could you not mm-hmm. think about it? The one in Texas last week where this commander on site made the call that it's no longer an active shooter situation. It's now a barricaded suspect, and kept the cops from going into the room where there were still children alive being terrorized. And so obviously he didn't handle the situation in the moment very well.
Well, you know, it's very interesting because I had a thought about that. I had read, a couple of weeks ago, maybe a month or so ago, about how speaking of Ukraine and the war in Ukraine, that the part of the problem with the Russian army and the military there and why they have been so, you know, why they have actually, you know, failed pretty much miserably is because, you know, it's a highly hierarchical, I mean, military is anyway, but I mean, there's just no dynamism in those troops. They're not allowed to make decisions. They aren't given the information to make decisions.
Right.
And that's why you have like generals coming down to the front, you know, to kind of prance around and say, look, you know, I'm here to guide you through. And it reminded me of that movie Chernobyl, you know, which mm-hmm. and the story of Chernobyl. And the same kind of thing happened. They're in a crisis, and they just couldn't really do anything because it's just the bureaucracy is so, you know, kind of moribund. It just it's non-functional, or at least dysfunctional in the ability to deal with a crisis. Well, I had the same thought as I'm thinking about those cops and down in Texas. I mean, here you had this guy, first of all, completely unqualified to be running a tactical kind of situation like
right.
that.
The head of the school police. Who had five officers under him in his chain of command. Really? This is the guy you're going to put in charge of this situation?
Well, exactly. And then you had all these other people. You know, you had the Customs and Border Protection. You had the Border Patrol. You had U.S. Marshals. You had people, you know, police flying in, driving in from all over the place. You had the local police. And this guy was put in charge, and he obviously couldn't make a decision or didn't know how to make the right decision. And what got me about that was, again, that sense of paralysis, that here you had these true professionals who ended up actually going in, from what we understand. I mean, I don't know how much is lies still about that whole situation. I don't know if we'll know the truth.
We don't know.
If ever.
Right.
But, you know, we certainly don't know the whole truth right now, I don't think. But, you know, here you had these guys, this big tactical SWAT team from the CPB, and they're going, gee, we'd really like to go in. And they finally did. But it's that same situation. And it occurred to me that maybe, you know, like Texas and Russia, and, you know, these kind of authoritarian places where you have these people that are sort of have this, you know, inculcated sense of, you know, hierarchy, where there's just absolutely no ability to kind of, you know, deal with a crisis with any sort of dynamic sense. It seems to me like they're sort of the same, cut from the same cloth. We're dealing with a certain kind of system that is not very good. And you see that in the Russian military, and you see that with, you know, maybe with police in the situation that we saw in Texas, because those are the kind of systems that they're building in Texas and that has long been built in Russia. I don't know. It just occurred to me that that's the kind of thing that we're seeing, because that, you know, what happened down there in Texas was just bizarre to me, that you had all these people, and they were all wearing vests, and they were all, you know, they had ballistic shields they
yep.
brought in that were there. This idea that they were paralyzed in the hallway, you know, 19 of them, because they were waiting for the head of the school police force to tell them to go in. I mean, none of that made any sense. But if they're so driven by a certain, you know, sense of rules and you know, a system that they don't know how to go around it,
right?
Or at least it takes too long to go around it. That's just how this kind of thing works. So,
the other telling part of it is the person who ultimately went in the room and killed the shooter, the murderer, was Border Patrol. He wasn't
right.
one of the cops who was under this guy and who probably got there and said, "What, you're telling me that everyone's just standing around because this guy told you not to go in? Well, screw that." Boom.
Well, that's exactly what ended up happening, at least from what I read, was that the tactical team, this Customs and Border Patrol tactical team that was there, that's their SWAT team, was sat around. They waited for a while. They
wow.
were going, you know, what's going on here? You know, and they were told, don't come in, you know, blah, blah, blah. And they finally took matters into their own hands and just did it. They go, you know, let's go find the key. And, you know, I mean, the whole idea that there was a key, just all of it is just so absurd.
Right. That's
and
all they
horrifying.
Needed was the key from the janitor to
right.
get
they
in the room.
They didn't need a battering ram or anything.
Right.
I mean, it's just that they get a key and open it up. And, you know, you have ballistic shields, you've got vests, and it's your job. And there's little babies in there that are bleeding out. You know,
that are calling 911
yeah.
over and over again. And
yeah,
saying,
horrifying.
We're still alive in here. Come and help us. And they called for over an hour. Can you imagine what these children are going to grow up with?
No. I mean, they're, you know, the trauma of that. I mean, it's traumatic just even hearing about it. You know, I mean, I can't even imagine these poor little kids.
Right.
You know, and we've seen some of them, you know, who have, you can tell that they are, you know, stunned and traumatized by what happened. And, you know, this whole, and then of course, I mean, you know, you and I, we're political people, so we mm-hmm. have to talk about this, and it's important. The reaction from the right, I mean, first of all, they didn't cancel that NRA convention. They
Amazing.
Went ahead and held it, and they did not need to do that.
Nope.
They even held the gun show.
Oh, my God.
And, you know, some of them, you know, sort of, you know, tried to sort of back out. You know, you had Dan Crenshaw and a few, Cornyn, and I guess Abbott only appeared on video, didn't show up. But Donald Trump showed up, and he said, hey, you know, I didn't cancel on you. Yay! You know, everybody in the crowd cheered him. And so they did that. And then you have Abbott, you know, talking on and on and on about mental health and doing this, which, by the way, you know they're not going to do anything about that either.
No.
You know, this idea that, oh, well, you know, they're not doing anything about guns because they're focusing on mental health, and I'm sitting there
right.
going, don't worry,
oh,
they're not going to do anything on that either. So, you know, and then, you know, which is all, of course, a deflection from the real issue. And then you've got, you know, in Washington, you've got, you know, Schumer comes out, he says, okay, I'll give you 10 days to, you know, pull something together. And Chris Murphy, who I believe is, you know, is acting in good faith and trying as hard as he can to do something. But the idea that they're going to get 10 Republicans is ridiculous. And today, Mitch McConnell gave away the game. He said, well, I think there's some things we can talk about, primarily school safety and mental health, right?
Yeah.
Nothing about the guns. So, you know, maybe, and okay, you know, take it. If they're going to put some funding behind mental health and, you know, I don't know, if it's school safety, as long as it isn't turning them into worse fortresses than they already are. But, you know, they're not going to do anything. And this is the game they play. And this is the game that Mitch, in fact, there was a piece, I think it was in Politico this week, about Mitch McConnell's history with the gun issue. And this goes all the way back to his very first campaign. And he has always, 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 you know, managed this in his own campaigns. And since he's been a leader in the Senate, they, you know, that what they do is they delay, delay, delay. They talk about this and that. Oh, we're going to do this. And so-and-so's meeting. And we've got a gang of eight or whatever the hell else they're doing. And then they just wait for the news cycle to change. And it's already changing, as you
yeah,
can see.
Right.
And, you know, and I heard, you know, that guy, what's his name, Jeb? He's from Punch Bowl.
Jake
Sherman.
Yes, Jake Sherman. Right.
His name.
Right.
He was on MSNBC, and he's going, oh, I really feel that something's going to change this time.
Oh,
you know,
God.
Mitch McConnell is very serious about this.
I
start literally all by myself watching TV, just started laughing out loud. I'm just going, you have got to be kidding me.
Right.
And I don't mean to sound so cynical. I mean, something has to be done, but I just don't see anything in the conditions right now that lead me to believe that this is going to change anything. It didn't change after Sandy Hook. It
nope.
didn't change after Parkland. It didn't even change after Las Vegas, where they shot up a bunch of country music fans,
right.
their own people.
That's right.
You know, I certainly don't see it now on the verge of an election that Mitch McConnell thinks he can win, that he's going to suddenly turn on guns. I mean, it's just not even
right.
reasonable,
so,
no matter how awful that situation was and how much it should be that, you know, people, if anyone with a conscience would say we have to do something. But, you know, we're talking about the Grim Reaper, the grave digger of democracy, Mitch McConnell. He's not going to do anything.
No, not at all, except they want to give the illusion that, okay, we're more than just thoughts and prayers. Did you hear that guy who got up at the NRA thing from the Good Liars, who I wasn't familiar with, but he got up to make a public statement ostensibly in support of Wayne LaPierre and the NRA and talking about how great it is that they give us these thoughts and prayers. And I mean, it just was so over the top.
Oh, I did not see that.
Oh,
I've got to look that up.
Oh my good. I will send it to you. It is so good. If I can find it, I'll play it. But before I get to that, I did cue something else up where what's going on in Uvalde, Texas is really frightening. Forget about the shooting that took place, because that's horrendous. But now the police, the school police and the Uvalde police are not cooperating with the state investigation. And Shimon Prokofiev, I think is how you say his name, from CNN, did a stakeout at this guy, the commander's office, and saw him when he came in because he's not commenting. He's not talking to anybody. The one who said don't go in, the one who said
right.
it's so
the chief of the school police.
The right. chief of school police. Right. Why he yeah. So I want to play for you what happened when Shimon Prokopyev tried to question him. And it's amazing. Check
Cooper,
this out.
Producer here we go. Here, who was at his home, seen him, saw him leaving his home. So we went to the office where we assumed he was going. And sure enough, we were sitting in our car when he drove in. So we quickly ran out and confronted him, essentially, as he was going in through the back door of the school district office. And we asked him about the accusations from the director of the DPS, who says that he was the sole person who made the decision to not have officers breach that door. We also asked him questions about whether or not he's cooperating with the investigation. Take a listen to what he said.
Listen to this.
So I want to talk to you about your decision and what the DPS director said.
How's it going?
Good, I'm Pete. Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you.
I want to talk to you about the decision and what
department we're doing, but just to let y'all know, and I just spoke with it.
I know you did, but
you're not bluffing me, are you?
No.
He won't turn to the camera. He's got his back to the camera.
We're not going to release anything. We have people in our community being buried, so we're going to be respectful.
I just want your reaction
to the director, McGraw, saying
that you were responsible for the decision
right.
to go into that room. How do you explain yourself?
We're going to be respectful to the family.
I understand that, but you have an opportunity to explain yourself to the parents.
And just so you know, we're going to do that eventually, obviously.
When?
And whenever this is done, and the families quit grieving.
Just so everybody knows,
we've been in contact with DPS every day, just so you all know.
They say that you're not cooperating.
I've been on the phone with them every day.
They say you're not cooperating. So, two seconds.
We've been talking to them every day.
What is your reaction?
Y'all have a good day.
What is your reaction, sir?
What a piece of shit. So he just totally blew him off. He would not answer his questions. He's like, we'll deal with this when the families quit grieving.
You know, I mean, to deploy the grieving families as his reason for not talking about it is so obscene.
Obscene.
Because the grieving families have been out there. I mean, we've seen a bunch of them. They've been on television. They've been talking to the press, and they want answers. And the idea that, you know, somehow or another it's disrespectful to not talk about it, because that's what the grieving families are, you know, are desperate to hear. I mean, the whole thing, that the whole way that the police, and by the way, let's not let the government of Texas off on this either. The way that Greg Abbott and his you know, Major Domo, Ken Paxton, and Dan Patrick, the lieutenant governor and the attorney general, both of whom are criminals and have no business being in office at all, are, you know, that they sat up there on the dais, and I knew there was something off. I knew there was something really wrong when they didn't do the normal, you know, look, as sad as it is, we know the routine for these mass shootings, right? I mean, we know what happens, and you have this, the press is there, blah blah blah, and then suddenly they come out with the cops, and they hold a press conference. They usually have the FBI there, and they introduce the people to the various ones, and they tell us what information they have. You don't see the governor or somebody like that come in for days, usually. That's not, you know, or if they do come in, it's a very brief sort of thing where they're standing there. He got up on a dais in some room, and they held this tableau like it was the Last Supper or something with all these officials that were there by their sides. And it was mostly talking about we feel for the families and all the thoughts and prayers, and then talked about mental health. And it was only incidentally had the head of the Texas Department of what's it called?
Public Service.
DPS.
Public Service. Right.
Public Service, Department of Public Service, that guy, you know, we've seen him, and he actually, you know, seems like, well, he's the only one who just said, yeah, it was a big mistake. I mean, that was totally wrong.
Right.
I mean, he's the one who came out and said that. But on that, and it was like the second day after the shooting that they had that thing, and as I'm watching it, I'm going, there's something really weird going on here. This isn't normal to have this kind of thing be held by the government officials. That's just not the way that stuff is done. You know, we know how it's done, and that's not it. They're covering something up, and you could tell by the way the cops were talking about it. And you could tell by the way, you know, the way that they were doing this dance, that the politicians were doing this dance. And, of course, Beto came in and confronted them at that particular press conference.
Oh, yes.
And they went crazy on him. I mean, they absolutely lost their minds, and you know, saying, calling him an asshole, and you know, saying that
horrible. And the mayor of this town, even like, you're despicable. Why?
Yeah.
You know what? They should have. If Abbott had any sense of decency, he would have said, you know what, Mr. O'Rourke, come up here. You're the Democratic nominee for governor. We need to work together on this. And instead, they yelled at him. They drove him out of the room. And he went outside and had a major press event.
Yeah. He did. And I was glad to see him do this. And in fact, afterwards, this is another sort of side, you know, digression on this whole thing. But it's important, I think. Because afterwards, I noticed on TV that a lot of the commentators, their instant reaction to Beto doing that was, oh, what a showboater, he was just doing that, and was that inappropriate, and blah, blah, blah. And to their credit, I give the Democrats that I saw on TV, like Paul Begala, who's not someone I would normally expect to be a rabble-rouser, you know, he's a pretty establishment guy, and he's from Texas, and a few others that really pushed back hard on that and went, no. This is what you want. This is what people need to do. They need to get up in their faces. And they pointed out, they're going, look, they weren't at his house. This is a public meeting. And, you know, he should have been taking questions. He should have been listening, you know, being willing to, you know, have a back and forth with Beto O'Rourke. And instead, they acted like animals up there.
That's right.
And had him kicked out. I mean, this is a public forum. And he had every right to say that, and Democrats need to do more of that. They need to get up in these people's faces. And I hope that they do, you know, and good on Beto for doing it. And it wasn't, you know, I don't think it was look, this is his issue, right?
Yep.
And I knew that this was going to hit him
hard.
I mean, he basically dropped out of the presidential primary.
And the El Paso
because of the
shooting,
El Paso
right?
shooting as anything. And, you know, he obviously has very strong feelings about guns. And that takes some guts in a state like Texas, you know, which is the very heart of gun culture. And, of course, he was going to come in there and confront them. And they acted like asses. And, you know, and thank God, you know, I saw some of the national Democrats, I can't think of anybody but Begala, but there were a couple more who were, you know, sort of going up to, again, someone like Erin Burnett, for instance, was rolling her eyes at Beto and saying, this was a little inappropriate.
And that's why I don't watch those shows anymore. By the way, I need to correct myself. Sorry, I did this the other day as well. It's the Department of Public Safety, not Service.
Department of Public Safety. DPS.
DPS. Same as in Arizona, she tells me. So I screwed that up twice. I wanted to correct it. But no, you know, I'm sick of these commentators who, you know, give the attitude. You know what? I think Beto was genuinely there. Like, what are you going to do to stop this? And they weren't giving any answers, so he went up there, and they should have brought him up on stage. And instead, they demeaned him and pointed fingers at him and called him names. And so he went outside and said, this is unacceptable, which it is.
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, I mean, of course, you know, I mean, they are refusing to debate at all anymore, right? I mean, I doubt we're going to see many more political debates going on. The Republicans have learned that they can just say no. Like Herschel Walker in Georgia, he refused. You had, you know, obviously Trump and his.
Well, can you imagine Herschel Walker debating Raphael Warnock?
I know. Well, yeah. I mean, you know, I kind of wanted to see it.
I want to see it.
Yeah. And I think that the people of Georgia have a right to see it.
Absolutely.
Because, and, you know, and Walker should not be, you know, I mean, I doubt whether or not he will debate Warnock in the general election. But they're doing this all over the place now, just saying, no, Republicans are refusing to debate. We won't. It's all rigged. You know, it's unfair, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, Trump now, they're saying that the Republicans are saying they won't debate in the presidential debate.
You know what?
So,
they
you know,
need
I mean,
to
the
go
idea
home.
That they would be willing to have Beto up there and you know, I mean, you could do it in a genial fashion and say, hey, look, you know, Beto, you know, we have our differences. We're running against each other, blah, blah, blah. But on this one issue, why don't we, you know, form a task force or some such stuff and try and get together and see what we can do? That would be something that, you know, I think, you know, common sense Americans would welcome to see something like that. It will never happen with those guys. They are absolutely, they are so beholden to gun culture. And by the way, it isn't the NRA alone anymore. I mean, I've written a ton of stuff about the NRA over the years, and, you know, I totally understand just how powerful they have been. They have, Wayne LaPierre is kind of an organizational genius. And he and another guy that are in the NRA, I can't think of his name at the moment, but they did this. The NRA was not this kind of a political group, and they certainly weren't so solely affiliated with the Republican Party. And
right.
LaPierre did that. They've been very powerful. But that's not what's happening anymore. I mean, that's just, they have, the NRA has problems. They're sort of suffering under scandal and financial problems.
A lot of problems.
They have a lawsuit in New York. You know, they've got a lot of problems going on. And so their power is diminished from where it was even, you know, I would say 8 years ago. But nonetheless, the gun culture that they created, and they and the gun manufacturers who have also been involved in this, have created and exploited this gun culture to the point where you don't need the NRA anymore. This exists outside. This is now, it is an organic, endemic part of the right wing in this country, and it's very, very difficult. It's gonna take many, many years. I mean, that's sort of why I'm so pessimistic about the idea that anybody's going to do anything about this, at least nationally. I mean, maybe some states will do some, you know, some tweaking at the edges, but it's because this is going to take years and years and years and years of hard organizational work to change the balance of power with this gun culture.
Yeah.
It is super strong, and it's affiliated with religion, and it's got, you know, it's got a whole thing. I mean, have you heard about this, the Mastriano's?
Oh,
group,
he's
the guy
nuts.
In Pennsylvania?
He's crazy. He's absolutely insane. and I guess the Democrat, I forget his name, wanted to run against him, thinking he's the most, you know, fringe, crazy out there candidate, but he now can win, which frightens me to no end.
It frightens me too, and this can be happening, you know, in everywhere. Now, Mastriano, now this is the only reason I bring him up in this, although he is a gun nut too, and he's definitely, you know, as far right as it gets, is because he's actually involved with a group that is, it's the son of the Reverend Sun Myung Moon. I don't know
oh my God!
That,
no, the
seriously.
Moon is. Oh my God!
And they worship the AR-15. I mean, I shouldn't laugh, but it's so bizarre that you kind of have to laugh at it. But nonetheless, I mean, we shouldn't laugh at anything like this anymore because it is so. You know, this is starting to permeate the mainstream of the Republican Party.
Well, it is.
Here's Mastriano, who just won, and let's see, I'm looking up here, but the name of this group is, I can't remember it. It's called they worship what they call the Rod of Iron, which is in the Bible. It's in Psalm 2:9 and, you know, Revelations or something, which they interpret as the AR-15 is the Rod of Iron. It's called the Rod of Iron Ministries.
Oh
now,
God.
Okay, you say there's set seven people out in the middle of nowhere in Pennsylvania, right, and this guy Mastriano just went to a meeting. Not true. There's a whole bunch of these people, and they've got a big campground they just bought in Oklahoma. They're doing have another one in Arizona, and there's all these people now. Eric Trump spoke at their meeting. Bannon spoke at their meeting. this is not. I mean, it's, you know, it's fringe, it's extreme, but you know, that's pretty close to the mainstream when you're talking Eric Trump, right?
Yes.
And now this guy Mastriano. And so this is where the convergence of gun culture and religion, that's an extreme example, but this is happening all over the place.
Well,
you
that's
know, I mean,
why
this is something
that's why. First of all, I sent you that video. And I wish you could watch it. I'm going to play it now. That's what makes this so frightening, because what I want you to do when you watch it, You'll hear the audio. But when you watch the video, is check out the other people in the room. By the way, it's a very sparsely attended event. It's an auditorium that's half empty. But the people in the seats are not reacting the way you and I will react. They're listening, and at the end, they applaud. But I want you to hear what this guy says. So he gets up to the microphone to comment.
The chair recognizes the gentleman at microphone 1A.
Thank you. My name is Jason Selvig, and I'm from West Palm Beach, Florida. And
of course he
I
is.
Would like to say that I am sick and tired of the left-wing media, and frankly, people in this room today spreading misinformation about Wayne LaPierre. Whenever there's a mass shooting, they all say that Wayne LaPierre isn't doing enough to stop these mass shootings, and even implying that Wayne LaPierre has played a part in making it easier for these shooters to get guns, to get weapons. You heard it after Las Vegas. You heard it after Pulse nightclub in Orlando. You heard it after Columbine. You heard it after Parkland. You heard it after Virginia Tech. You heard it after Sandy Hook. You heard it after El Paso. You heard it after Buffalo.
Wow.
You kept hearing that Wayne LaPierre isn't doing enough. And frankly, that's not true. The NRA, under Wayne LaPierre's leadership, has provided thoughts and prayers to the victims and their families. And maybe these mass shootings would stop happening if we all thought a little bit more and we prayed a little bit more.
My God.
So I'm asking everyone in this room to think.
And pray.
To pray.
Yeah. And think and
give
pray.
Give your thoughts and your prayers and your thoughts and your prayers and your prayers and your thoughts. And if we give enough of these thoughts and these prayers, these mass shootings will stop.
Right.
So I want to thank you, Wayne LaPierre, for all your thoughts
and prayers.
And all your prayers.
Yeah. And the crowd applauds.
Yay!
And there's nobody, you know, looking at like, what the fuck is this guy doing? Right? Wayne LaPierre looked pissed. He was the only one, though.
He's the only one who got it, I think, who
yep.
was sophisticated enough to hear the satire in that. They're all sitting there going, you know, really, thoughts and prayers, for sure.
And maybe if we all thought more.
Thoughts and prayers.
Thought more and prayed more. We need more. Oh, my God. It just brilliant.
Never say that Wayne has not, that LaPierre's not done enough. He has given thoughts and prayers after, and he goes that long
and
list.
The list of all the shootings, right? It was just
brilliant.
So I emailed it to you. It should be there.
Thank you. I'll put it up on my blog. I don't know how I missed that. It seems like something I would have come across.
I never heard of these guys before. They're called the Good Liars. Apparently,
cool.
They're a comedy. They're sort of like Yes Men-esque, but cool.
I love that. Right? I mean, it takes some guts to go into these situations. Of course, those people are so dazed and confused. They didn't even know that they were being sent up by that.
When you watch the video, look at the faces of the people because they just don't get it. That's what's astounding to me. Are they that brain dead? Are they such lemons?
Yes.
Yeah, because these are the same people that like Donald Trump that still follow him after all this.
Of course. And, you know, I mean, that is the base of the Republican Party. That is, you know, they are, I mean, this is something that it's so difficult because, you know, you hear a lot, and I understand it. I understand it from the point of view of if you're a political organizer and you're trying to create a situation in the United States under the system that we have, you know, there has to be some way to try and break the logjam, right, this polarization. And, you know, that one of the things that everybody always says, you know, you've got to, you know, we have to reach out. I heard somebody on TV yesterday going on and on about how, you know, the East Coast and urban, you know, the two coasts and the urban, media, the way they talk about guns, they don't understand that people, you know, that many people just want them for hunting and want them for self-protection, and they're not out there. They don't want to open carry. They wouldn't want to do this. And I'm just sitting here going, you know, okay, you can say that. There probably are people. I mean, I'm literally anti-gun. I mean, I don't think there should be any. However, I am not out there, you know, proselytizing for taking away everybody's guns, because I know that this country is full of, you know, gun owners that want to go out and hunt and do those things. I mean, I get it, and, you know, we live in a democracy, and they have rights and blah, blah, blah. That's not really happening. I'm not out there saying this, and I'm trying to give as much, you know, to people who, you know, if they want to hunt. I mean, I like animals, so that's kind of hard for me to take anyway. But, you know, but nonetheless, I get it, you know, and I'm saying, okay, no one's arguing that. We're talking about semi-automatic weapons mowing down children. That is what we're talking about here. That is what is happening. We're talking about domestic violence situations where people are, you know, they're leaving their guns lying around, and their toddlers pick them up and shoot each other with them. I mean, this is the kind of stuff that is concerning to me, not somebody going out and hunting or, you know, having a self-defense weapon in their house. I'm not even trying to have that argument with anybody.
Right.
So that's a red herring that people throw out there. And the reality is that, and I mean, this is something, it is very difficult. I can reach out all I want, and they're not hearing me. They're not hearing me say that because they don't want to hear me say that. And the reason is that we have a right wing in this country, which is very rural centered, but not completely. I've got one in my block here in Santa Monica.
Really?
Big Trump guy. Yeah. Yes. You know, I mean, look, it happens.
Yeah.
You know, even here.
Even in Santa Monica.
Exactly. You know, I mean, with this, it is not that. This is a group of people who are, you know, they've taken on a certain kind of cult-like, you know, mentality where they're under siege by the rest of the world, and everybody's out to get them, and they are, you know, they're in danger of being annihilated, and the culture's going to hell, et cetera, et cetera. It isn't just Trump. It's this whole sort of, you know, group of different interest groups that have come together under this one umbrella of, you know, anti-abortion and gun culture and religion. And, you know, patriarchy, and, you know, it used to be military. I don't know what's happening with that, and it used to be police, but, you know, that kind of goes back and forth depending on the situation. But, you know, this is a group of people who are just kind of in this kind of this maelstrom of their own making of, you know, a feeling of chaos and grievance and anger. And I don't, you know, how do we reach them? And, I guess I'm supposed to pretend like that isn't happening. Like I'm not watching that group of people at the NRA sitting there clapping and, you know, looking at this guy like, yeah, the thoughts and prayers, you know. It's like, it's weird. It's strange. And I'm watching this entire group of people undergoing this very strange kind of almost mind control. And I don't know if it comes out of Fox completely or what's the internet or, you know, whatever. But, you know, and then they're turning into wild conspiracy theorists.
I think it's all of the above. I think the
internet
brought them together. I think COVID had a big part in it, too, because people were shut in. They were stuck at home. But they had this machine where they could connect with other like-minded crazies around the world. And their strength in numbers. And they found each other. And these theories perpetuate and they grow. And, you know, and that's how QAnon became this thing. Do you remember the first time you heard about QAnon? You're like, oh my God, all right, that's not going to go anywhere. And then the first time you saw a Q sign at a Trump rally and you're thinking, what? And then when he acknowledges them and now it's everywhere, you have to wonder what's going on. You know, I talk about the Republicans trying to dumb down our education system, which they've been doing. And maybe it's because they think a stupid electorate is one that's going to vote for them.
Oh, for sure. I have no doubt. Well, Trump said it. Remember, we love the
we love the poorly educated. I love the poorly educated. Exactly.
I love the poorly educated. Right.
That's how it went.
Great. Yeah, for sure.
Ugh.
For sure.
Hi, Sid Digby. Again, we blew through the hour. We didn't even talk about Durham, but that's okay because we'll cover it with Marcy Wheeler.
You got Marcy.
And
you don't need me for that one.
Can read your piece up at salon.com and, of course, at digbysblog.net. That's Digby's hullabaloo. I'm really worried. I mean, I'm sitting here with a sort of a happy face on, but I think each day that passes, we get more and more out there. We've taken a weird turn into, you know, opposite world. I guess I should pull out my opposite
facts
world.
No longer matter. Reality
I always call it
now fiction.
World. And it's kind of opposite world. And by the way, we should be worried. And the cultural stuff, I mean, maybe that will, you know, we're in a wild phase that will fade or something. But one thing that isn't fading is the Republicans are getting set to do some shenanigans with our electoral system that is really, really scary. Politico has an article today. There's a whole bunch of stuff about the plans that they have.
Oh, yeah. And actually, that piece by Heidi Prisbella, who's no longer at NBC, wrote this piece for Politico. And I bet NBC is kicking themselves now because this is an amazing piece that people should read.
It is an amazing piece, and it is important that everybody read it because we're going to have to be prepared for this. They're going to create chaos.
Yep.
In the elections. That is the whole point. And out of the chaos, they will come up with one of their wild schemes, or maybe a number of their wild schemes, then to turn the election in their favor. And it's
Without a doubt.
Scary what they're doing.
Yep. I hope everyone's paying attention. I'll post the political piece on the blog today along with this show. Heather Digby Parton, always such a pleasure. Thank you so much.
My pleasure.
Love talking to you. It's just
you too. Anytime. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for coming. I'll talk to you later. All right.
Okay.
Bye bye. Digby, there you go. So, a quick reminder again: part two of this very program airs on the broadcast tonight. Sorry, I'm got a frog in my throat. So, at progressivevoices.com at 8 p.m. Eastern. Or on any of the plethora of other stations that carry Brad's show, or at bradblog.com after 8 p.m. You can get the show posted there, and I'll also post it at nicolesandler.com too, so you can hear it. I'd play it for you, but it's not done yet, so I got to go over there and do that. So come back for part two in a couple hours, and for right now, I will leave you with the news. And this news cast, this What's News edition, does talk about that Politico piece that everybody should read. All right. Thank you for listening. Thanks for bearing with me doing double duty. Days like this are just crazy. Today's the last day I'm doing it. So I'll see you tomorrow. Back to business as usual. Okay. All right. Thanks, everyone. Talk to you in a couple hours at bradblog.com. Bye.
It's time for Nicole Sandler's What's News from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
Welcome to June. It's LGBTQ Pride Month. Today is also the official start of the 2022 Atlantic hurricane season. And two areas are being monitored for development. There's a high chance that one of them will develop into a tropical depression over the southeast Gulf of Mexico by the weekend. Lovely. Oh, it's also National DJ Month and National Adopt-a-Cat Month, in case you were wondering. A Washington, D.C. jury on Tuesday found prominent Democratic lawyer Michael Sussman not guilty of lying to investigators in a 2016 meeting in which he shared data on an alleged link between Trump Tower and Russia's Alpha Bank that was later debunked. Special counsel John Durham, who was appointed during the Trump administration, accused Sussman of hiding his ties to Hillary Clinton's 2016 presidential campaign when he brought the allegations to then FBI General Counsel Jim Baker. Sussman said the jury recognized that he told the truth and was, quote, falsely accused. Durham, who was assigned to seek signs of misconduct during the investigation into the former guy's ties to Russia, said in a statement that he was disappointed, but he respected the jury's decision. Tune in Wednesday night, 8 p.m. Eastern, to the broadcast on the Progressive Voices Network to hear my interview with Marcy Wheeler, recorded just this morning, in which she brings us up to speed on the Durham investigation and previews next week's public hearings from the January 6th committee. So this month, we'll be getting a lot of Supreme Court decisions as we count down the days till the end of the term. On Tuesday, the high court temporarily blocked a new Texas law that would restrict social media platforms like Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube from moderating content. The law, HB 20, prohibits large social media platforms from banning and blocking posts and accounts. And the divide in the court was odd. Justice Elena Kagan joined with conservatives Alito, Thomas, and Gorsuch to dissent from the 5-4 majority. Stephen Breyer and Sonia Sotomayor stood with Chief Justice Roberts, Brett Kavanaugh, and Amy Coney Barrett to put the legislation on hold while they send it back to the lower courts to decide whether it's a legal breach of the First Amendment. The law is being challenged by tech industry advocacy groups who call it, quote, an unprecedented assault on the editorial discretion of private websites that could force them to disseminate everything from Russian propaganda to hate speech. While we're talking Supremes, court officials are stepping up their investigation into the leak of that draft decision, which would potentially overturn the landmark 1973 Roe v. Wade decision that legalized abortion in the U.S. CNN's reporting that several law clerks have been ordered to turn over cell phone records and sign affidavits. This unprecedented inquiry into a very rare leak has increased already high tensions at the court in advance of what's expected to be the conservative majority overturning precedents that established a constitutional right to abortion. Just amazing. The town of Uvalde, Texas, is grieving the loss of 19 children and two of their teachers as funerals continue this week. Meanwhile, the school police chief blamed for the deadly delay in the response to the massacre, Pete Arredondo, was sworn in as a new city council member yesterday. He won a seat in last week's election, though the meeting at which he would have been sworn in was canceled after the massacre. But Arredondo has not responded to requests from the Texas Rangers for a follow-up interview in their investigation of the response, and he still has his job. At the same time, we learned that the Uvalde Police Department and the Uvalde Independent School District Police Force are no longer cooperating with an investigation into their response to the shooting. The refusal reportedly comes after a comment made by Colonel Stephen McGraw, the director of the Texas Department of Public Safety, who at a press conference on Friday said that it was the wrong decision for the police to wait nearly an hour to enter the classroom where the gunman was located.
Of course it was not the right decision. It was the wrong decision, period.
This story is far from over. Congress is out this week, but the House Judiciary Committee is convening an emergency session Thursday to mark up a package of 8 gun violence prevention bills. Included in the package, measures that would raise the age for buying semi-automatic rifles from 18 to 21, that make it a federal offense to import, sell, make, or possess high-capacity magazines, with, of course, some exceptions, and stiffen penalties for drug trafficking and straw purchases. The committee's goal is to get the package to the full chamber as soon as possible, though it faces very long odds in the Senate. Well, on Wednesday, President Biden had an editorial in the Wall Street Journal dealing with inflation. Today, he's writing in the New York Times about the war in Ukraine, announcing that the U.S. will send advanced medium-range rocket systems to Ukraine. Those would be the most significant weapons that Biden has sent since the start of the war. Ukraine has long pushed for the U.S. to provide these high-mobility artillery rocket system, which can fire satellite-fired rockets, despite concerns in Washington that Russia would see that as a provocation. In the New York Times, Biden wrote that the latest aid would help Ukraine, quote, fight on the battlefield and be in the strongest possible position at the negotiating table. These rockets will give Ukraine the capability of attacking beyond the current reach of its artillery, but the administration officials stressed that the weapons would help Ukraine defend its own territory, not to be in a position to attack Russia. Of his strategy, Biden said that the U.S. would not pressure Ukraine to give up any territory in negotiations, and he noted that, quote, we do not want to prolong the war just to inflict pain on Russia, and he said the U.S. will not seek Russian President Vladimir Putin's ouster. All right. A Ukrainian court on Tuesday sentenced two more Russian soldiers to 11 and a half years in prison in connection with the shelling of the town of Derhachi in northeastern Ukraine. The court found Alexander Babykin and Alexander Ivanov, a Russian artillery driver and gunner, guilty of shelling the town from Russia. The judge saying, quote, the guilt of Babykin and Ivanov has been proven in full. Prosecutors said the men shelled an educational facility, although no casualties were reported. Defense lawyers said they were just following orders. This decision was the second guilty verdict handed against Russian soldiers involved in the invasion of Ukraine. And finally, Politico is out with a huge story today, fueled by video recordings of Republican Party operatives and activists discussing a multi-pronged strategy to target and potentially overturn votes in Democratic precincts. How? Well, by installing their own trained recruits as regular poll watchers and putting them in direct contact with the lawyers. Reporter Heidi Prisbola wrote the report noting the four areas that were being created. The poll workers, the Republican lawyers who those poll workers can connect with to document alleged voter fraud, party-friendly district attorneys who could intervene to block vote counts at certain precincts, and installing party loyalists on the board of canvassers. They're the ones responsible for certifying the election. That also appears to be part of the strategy. Well, law and political science professor at University of California Irvine School of Law, Rick Hassan, said that what they're planning, quote, creates the potential for mucking things up at polling places and potentially leading to delays or disenfranchisement of voters, especially if the poll workers come in with the attitude that something is crooked with how elections are run. And that's just a bit of what's news for now. I'm Nicole Sandler. If you appreciate these reports and the Nicole Sandler Show, I hope you'll consider making a contribution. My work is 100% listener supported, and I can't do it without your help. Find out more at NicoleSandler.com, and please click on that donate button.